Welcome to episode 19 of Speak Beastie for August 28th, 2016.
I'm Ariel.
I'm Megan.
I'm Claire.
And I'm Sophie.
Hooray!
We don't have anything. Last week we had like two birthdays and a bunch of other things to announce, and now it's just like, here we are. It's us.
Here we are again.
Oh, well, that's a big announcement. We've got two Brits.
Yay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Two Brits. We're so lucky.
Yes. This is the first time that we've been able to do this, have our two resident Brits on the show together.
I know.
And now a message from our sponsor.
Stop the presses! Speak Beastie is on Patreon.com. With options ranging from $1 to $5 per month, you can become a sponsor of Speak Beastie and help us to bring you more from Newt's fantastic wizarding world. But wait, there's more! Rewards include access to bloopers and extended conversations. You can also help us decide on a discussion topic for future episodes. We want to thank all of our sponsors for helping us reach our first goal. Our next goal is to get merchandise. Check out patreon.com/speakbeastie to learn more and become a sponsor today.
And now for the Phoenix Register. So we got a little bit of news, not as much as last time. In an interview with Entertainment Weekly, Catherine Waterston actually admitted that she didn't think she was going to get the part. She talked a bit about her audition. She said, "I thought it really couldn't have gone worse. The casting director had just eaten a lot of cake, and he said, 'I'm sorry, I just ate a lot of cake.' And then he had, like, indigestion during my audition, and he didn't seem to be watching me, so I thought, oh, I'm boring him." I think, I'm sorry, that kills me a little bit, because it's like, poor casting director who just wanted some cake and then had trouble, and luckily she still got the role. It's just an interesting situation. Like, if that had been anyone else who obviously didn't get the role, it wouldn't have been, you know, a story, but I don't know. He was like, "Sorry, I just ate a lot of cake." For me, like, I don't know, if someone were to apologize, you always picture
auditions for like these big Hollywood franchises being so much more glamorous. So it's funny to hear just like, "Oh yeah, sorry, I ate too much and I'm not feeling well."
Yeah. It's just like someone in a room as they bring other people into a room, and they're probably there like all day, probably all week, just seeing person after person after person. It's probably exhausted.
Yeah.
Yeah. So maybe you can't really blame the guy for eating some cake. Yeah.
That was probably the highlight of his day, to be honest. And he just was like, "Oh, I gotta eat all the cake. I'm just so happy." But in the interview, she continues to say, "I was very surprised to hear that they wanted to put me through the ringer and do a test. And then that's just a nightmare, because then you're really attached by that point and you're fantasizing and thinking about the character and why you're the only person who can play her because of whatever reasons you've dreamed up. You start wanting to play the scenes." And that little snippet kind of made me think of Emma Watson describing auditioning for Hermione and how she was like, you know, "I didn't want anyone else to play Hermione. Like, it had to be me." So I like that kind of, I guess that's something a lot of actors and actresses feel, of course, but I like that when I read that, I immediately thought of someone else from, you know, the original Potter series.
Yeah, and it makes you feel good about that person playing the role.
Yeah.
You're like, they get it, they're going to be dedicated to it, it's going to be good.
Oh, yeah. And funny enough, continuing in the interview, she said, "You have to figure that your character is going to have some comparisons to Hermione. Are you kind of prepared for that? It's not something I'm thinking about it all, so I guess I'm not prepared. She was amazing. So it's interesting in my perspective, like, thinking about it. They're all starting as adults, you know, they've been probably acting for much longer. Emma Watson, that was her first audition for anything, really, I think. I think she'd done, like, school plays in the past, not obviously any big Hollywood films. So to have an adult who had been in films before and knows the process, who's worried that they're going to be compared to another character in the original series, it's kind of funny to me, because it's they were all children, essentially. Like, they were very much, we watched them grow up, and they were kind of newbies. So I never once thought to consider comparing Hermione and Porpentina. So I'm interested to see how those two characters actually do have similarities. Yeah.
I think also it just feels like lazy journalism that could potentially end up happening, that you've just got a smart female lead being compared to another smart female lead. They're probably completely different. There's absolutely no similarities other than they're intelligent. But they compare them. But there's also going to be just natural comparisons between, Harry and Newt, and probably Tina and Hermione, and probably also Ron and Jacob. With the comedy duo and stuff, and there'll probably be some kind of, they'll find somewhere to compare with the others. Like, there will be so many comparisons to the Harry Potter series, but I think the Hermione one is probably going to be the biggest. But also, the actors aren't massively older than the trio. I could be completely wrong. But I feel like the actress playing Queenie is in her mid to late 20s, which, you know, is about the same age as the Harry Potter cast are. I guess that's almost like a natural comparison. If you're just like, well, they are the same age, they could have almost been in the original series, other than the fact they're American. You know, there's all those quotes with Edward saying he wants to be in them. So I think those comparisons are going to be natural. But I hope people do just try and see it as its own thing.
Yeah. I think you're right. We're going to get more of that, and it's going to be kind of annoying.
Yeah, I can definitely start to see the Harry and the Newt comparisons, even though we don't know too much about Newt. I'm like, don't compare those two, because they're, I think, so fundamentally different. Like, maybe they have a few things in common, but as you said before, Claire, how it's like, you know, with Hermione and Tina, like, oh, they're female and they're smart. Like, it would be that kind of same reach with Harry and Newt. Like, oh, they're guys and they are lead in the film. Like, it's just kind of like it would
they're
be kind of a
played
stretch.
By actors that I would like to spend more time with.
They have that in common. They have Megan in common.
Yes.
So we did get more information from Entertainment Weekly. They did release covers for new tie-in books that will be expected this fall in the US and the UK. One of these books is called J.K. Rowling's Wizarding World, Movie Magic Volume 1, Extraordinary People and Fascinating Places. So, quite the title. On the cover of the Wizarding World Movie Magic one I just said, we have pictures of the original trio and Dumbledore, and then we have the Fantastic Beasts cast. I like the way they did this cover. I don't know if you're looking at the picture right now, but they have it on top with Hogwarts and Dumbledore, Harry, Hermione, and Ron. And then at the bottom they have 1920s New York with Jacob, Queenie, Newt, and Tina. So I like how the cover looks. It's really cool. And
yeah.
It blends the two styles, which I like. And you have then the lightning bolt and the owl, and then beneath that you have a Fantastic Beast and a Witch on a Broom, which I'm thinking might kind of be an Ilvermorny-ish tie-in. I'm not sure. I can't even speak for what the beast is. It looks kind of like a Flooper. Do you see what I'm talking about? Yeah, the one between Jacob and Queenie?
Which one?
Oh, those little tiny things.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah,
if I wasn't... know what that is.
Yeah. It's cute, though.
Yeah. We like it.
Yeah, they are tiny.
It's a good cover. Good,
yeah.
Although if they're releasing official books with the trio and the new quad, whatever you call it, obviously people are going to start comparing if they're actually creating books with all these characters on the same page together. I'm fairly confident these are just going to be like mashed up versions of the page to screen books. So they'll take content from the page to screen for Harry Potter and they'll just throw some Fantastic Beasts stuff in there. I don't know if anyone's got the page to screens, but they are big.
Yeah, I have one of them because they are so large and it's hard to... Back when, you know, these were coming out, it was hard to keep up. I didn't work for MuggleNet and wasn't getting this news just, you know, all the time in my face. But now... Now it's like, it's everywhere, all these things. I know so much about them, and I'm getting so overwhelmed because I'm like, I can't afford all of this. Stop it.
Yeah.
It's too much. But the description that was given, it says, this book features all 8 Harry Potter movies and the upcoming movie Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. And it'll be the ultimate insider's guide to the films. From J.K. Rowling's Wizarding World for young fans. From the gilded halls of Gringotts and Hogwarts to the New York City of Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, each page of this book delivers a fun, interactive experience for young readers as they discover how the extraordinary places and fascinating characters of the Wizarding World took shape on screen. This is exciting to me. Filled with lift the flaps, stickers, nice. And other engaging inserts, this engrossing book overflows with captivating facts about the movie magic. So... It also includes insights from the actors who played Harry Potter, Professor Dumbledore, Newt Scamander, which we obviously know, Daniel Radcliffe, etc. Sorry, my mind blanked for a second. I wanted to say Richard Harris, and then I got sad, and I was like, Michael Gambon. And then by the time all of that had gone through my mind, my mouth had already spoken. I was like, well, too late. So there you have it.
I love this trend of... like coloring books for adults and now lift the flap and sticker books for adults.
That's what I live
totally
for.
Totally on board.
I love the children's section at like Barnes and Noble and those touch and feel books. Those are my favorite. I hate that there's not ones for adults. That not like adult themed, you know what I mean? Like I just mean,
lift the flap.
We know.
I've put my foot in my mouth. I just mean, like, if you're just, like, reading, I don't know, Catcher in the Rye, which isn't, like, an adult book or anything. I couldn't think of anything, but it's just like, oh, touch and feel Holden's hat. Like, that would be fun to me. Those are the things I would live for. That's the kind of interactivity I need.
These do sound a bit like the page to screens. Like they have a pull-out Mordor's map, and they have potion labels, which all seems quite odd that they released all that, and then like Mina Lima started printing it. I was like, I could just frame the stuff that I got in the book.
I actually thought about that before with my copy, because it has all of the mind blank. Umbridge's decrees.
Yeah.
It had a few of those. I was like, this would be so cool to hang on my wall.
Yeah. And there's the Yule Ball invitation as well. That's really cool.
Yes. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
All of which you could buy as prints. So they really did that one through. But they also did say young fans. So I wonder if these books are going to be introductory kind of things. So, because I mean, the page to screen and then the one that came after that was like 50 quid and an absolute tome is huge. That isn't for just casual fans. That is A, for big Harry Potter fans, but also film fans, because it goes really into depth in how they made it.
Yeah.
It's essentially like the book version of the studio tour before they opened the studio tour. But this, just by the front cover as well, as lovely as it is, it feels a bit more like appealing to a younger audience and attracting a different kind of audience.
Literally going to be like for kids to get them into Harry Potter and things like that?
I'm not sure for kids, but I think aimed at like, if they say young fans, so I think maybe early teens, I think that'll be their target. But I don't think, I mean, obviously they're not going to judge us for all buying it, which we probably will. But yeah, it just, I think they are trying to sort of bring in a younger audience or a new audience to Harry Potter that might not have encountered Harry Potter yet, but mm-hmm. will get drawn in by these movies.
Well, cool. Speaking of books catered to adults, we also have news of J.K. Rowling's Wizarding World, a pop-up gallery of curiosities, which is definitely right up my alley. Entertainment Weekly said, J.K. Rowling's Wizarding World is full of magical curiosities, a flying car, a hat that sings, an enchanted case, and so much more. This small, deluxe pop-up book showcases three-dimensional renderings of some of the beloved curiosities from the Harry Potter films, including two pop-ups related to the upcoming Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. So this one, in my opinion, sounds much more, and even if you look at the cover, it seems much more catered to, like, younger children. Like, probably can't even read Harry Potter yet. And maybe the movie magic one is for, you know, anyone ranging from 11 to 110. So
I think it could completely depend on what the wording inside is like, because they said each will feature text that delves into the items on each spread and how they were achieved in the films. So this could almost be just like nerdy model makers, like my friend who's an architect and just makes models in his spare time. Like,
true.
Cool.
I don't know, it depends on how much detail they're going to do. Like, the bit of the studio tour that is, like, how they structured the set. I mean, my mate, who's just qualified, he went in there and I'd never seen his eyes just, like, pop out of his head. It was just, like, lots of this is when you were reading, I was like, oh, yeah, that's what that is. And now I look at it again, I'm like, maybe this is aimed for children. But I don't know, I think it's going to cater to multiple different audiences. Although I can't believe they're still bringing in the sodding doxies. So I don't know, Pixies were in the second film and they still use those images. It's bizarre.
It is interesting that for that particular book where it says it's going to be small, so I assume it's going to have to fit in a lot in a small amount of space, that they have a picture of Harry with the sorting hat and then the Cornish pixie.
Yeah.
So and it's just those two. Like, if you look at the cover, it's not much else. So I don't know why they chose, like, Harry and the sorting hat, understandable completely. But yeah, the Cornish pixie, I don't look at that and think that defines the series right there.
I
think they kind of, they weren't so focused on different creatures as the series went on, though. Like, that's trying to remember a creature, an unusual magical creature, like, aside from Buckbeak.
In the film series especially.
Right, that's what I mean. Like, they kind of just glossed over a lot of, like, the Scroots and all of the stuff that we saw in the books. So maybe they just didn't really have a lot to choose from.
Dragons.
Yeah, that's true.
That's true. They did have dragons.
But for certain children, I can understand how a pop-up of a Norwegian Ridgeback might be a bit frightening. So
that'd be the best thing ever.
We'll see. It just pops up with the fire.
If you like, look at the coloring book as well, has a build it yourself 3D firebolt brim, which also sounds amazing. What? So
yeah,
I know what I'm gonna all ask these for things.
Yeah, all these things I can't actually afford right now.
Ask Santa for them.
Dear Santa, buy me all the things. Mm-hmm. Or make me all the things with your elves.
Mm-hmm.
So on to other news. The props and costumes from Fantastic Beasts will actually be making an appearance at the London Studio Tour. So for all you people who think, I've been to the tour and I've seen it all, no you haven't. Because it was announced, the new display on Facebook, and the text said, J.K. Rowling invites you to explore more of the Wizarding World with Fantastic Beasts movie and Where to Find Them. Be among the first to see costumes and props from Fantastic Beasts on display at the studio tour for a limited time as we count down to the release this November. So if you do plan on going to the tour, you only have until, I guess, November to see all of these awesome things. There's pictures if you go to the MuggleNet article. It's just titled Fantastic Beasts Props, Costumes, Make Appearance at London Studio Tour. And it has pictures of what looks like Graves' coat, Queenie's outfit, Newt's iconic outfit, and Tina's hat and the little coat combo. And then we see more of the Newt case. We see some little trinkets that I'm not entirely sure what they are capable of doing. So if you do go to the studio tour and able to see these things, please feel free to message us.
That one thing is a wand polisher, according to the sign.
Which I kind of like this. It looks like it's got a stool. It looks a little bit like it's the wizard take on a shoe polish.
That's what was shown in the preview that the house elf was sitting on, right?
Yeah, it's a wand polisher.
All right, then. Mystery solved.
Also, the gold thing at the end. Magical exposure threat level. I imagine that's something that's in the Makuza. Flagging when Newt lets everything go gray-gray.
Yes. Gray-gray. I wonder what those numbers mean beside where I think it says witch hunt exposure obliviation. Because it's 537, 82, 910.
Yeah, I don't know.
Like, amount of people, maybe? Amount of nomadges they had to obliviate, or amount of nomadges exposed, amount of witch hunters. Maybe that's what is at the end of that.
Maybe tracking the incidents. So, like, how many have there been? There's been 82 possible exposure incidents.
Okay. That would make definitely more sense.
Days since our last nonsense.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe that would that make sense? No, that doesn't make sense. How long? Hang on. It's in 500 years, definitely not.
Yeah.
Oh, no, 500 days, maybe. Hang on. Where were the Salem Witch Trials?
1692.
Okay, no, that's definitely more than 500 days.
500 days is about a year and a half-ish.
Maybe that's the plot. Maybe there was a previous one.
We do have the second Salemers.
Yeah, you have a name.
Interesting things. Yeah. Ooh.
Do you have to be in the UK to do that?
Well, last week's was New York, so I'm imagining not. Like, it was London and New York, so I imagine they would probably save on flights and just send, like, UK people to London, Americans to New York. But yeah, so I think they vary each week.
Okay.
Check it out, guys.
It's exciting.
Cool. Mm-hmm. I think I'm gonna do it.
Yeah, I've definitely entered, like, repeatedly, like, give me the freeze card.
Yeah.
Win all the things. So at Speak Beastie, we don't have any giveaway or anything, but we are selling Speak Beastie shirts available, well, by the time this episode comes out, only for a few days. So be sure to check out our Facebook page or our Twitter for the links to order the shirts if you want one, which you should because they're awesome. I've already ordered my shirt. So,
if you want to match Ariel,
yes, if you want to be samesies, then order a shirt and let us know on Twitter or Instagram, Facebook, or just email us and be like, I'm so excited for my Speak Beastie shirt. And I promise it'll be a great topic of conversation when you go out in public, as I learned with my MuggleNet shirt that one time. So, that's it for the news for this episode. If you want to check out any more news, please be sure to go to MuggleNet.com and look at the Fantastic Beast tag. Now time for the outpost. So in episode 18, we asked the following question. Do you think Credence possesses magical abilities? Why or why not? Relapsed fan said, I'm leaning towards Credence being magical, especially after examining the new picture of him in Graves. There's a larger version of it in the gallery at the official Fantastic Beasts website. Something's going on with Credence's right leg by his knee. At first, I thought it was a gash, but then I realized his leg is transparent there. Can Credence make himself invisible somehow, or is Graves performing a disillusionment charm on him or something? It's also intriguing. Plus, the Entertainment Weekly article about Credence mentioned something I had already come to suspect, which is that he has two sisters by adoption. My guess is that Chastity and Modesty are Mary Lou's other children just because of the naming pattern among all three. Credence is a little less obvious, but still, it's a word that's related to faith or belief, especially when you think of its relationship with the word creed. Finally, here's a cool tidbit I came across recently, although I can't find the picture's source anymore. It was a close-up of Newt's passport and a couple other props, and the number on it is pretty familiar. 62442. So, just a little Easter egg for you there. I really appreciate the answer to this because, one, they did their digging, and two, they came up with even more theories to get us talking. Because I am not going to lie, for a minute there, I did forget about Modesty and what role she is going to be playing in the series. So to have Credence and Modesty be related, I don't know who Chastity is. I don't remember that casting announcement. Yeah.
That's not Zoe Kravitz's character, is it?
I don't think they told us who her character was.
Okay.
Who? Sorry.
I know. Zoe Kravitz.
Oh, right. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know who she is. What does everyone think about his leg being transparent?
I'm just trying to look at this thing now. And annoyingly, the picture I found is not that good quality. So the more I zoom in, the less it looks real. But it looks super odd. Also, like, if you were being disillusioned or going invisible, would you really start with your knee? I mean, that's quite an odd place,
right?
Yeah,
that seems very strange.
But I remember in Harry Potter, he said it felt like kind of like an egg cracking on his head and going down.
Yeah,
so
you
think that's how it would. Yeah, so you think that's how it would work. So it does kind of seem like something interesting is going on. I can't exactly place.
I was arguing last week that I wasn't sure if Credence was magical. And I don't know that somebody else performing a charm on him is enough to make me think that he is. Like, I feel like in this movie, the lines between magic and non-magic people are going to get really blurred and weird. And you have, you know, Newt and Jacob hanging out together, and we're not sure what Graves' whole deal is, other like his motives and what he's trying to accomplish. So I'm reserving my judgment here.
We just can't convert you, can we?
Well, partially for the sake of argument, but partially because I don't know. Something is going on with him, and I feel like it's too obvious for it to be that he's a wizard. I want it to be something else.
I'm just stuck in my convictions. I can't imagine him not being magical, and if they do, it has to be something big. I think for him to be in the story and involved, it can't be as, I think I've said this before, but it can't be as simple as he stumbled into this situation a la Jacob and he's a nomad as well. I want to see a little bit of difference in situation. So
but
I know that the fact
he could be a nomad whose family is part of the Second Salemers. I think that would be a really interesting dynamic.
Yeah. Maybe it'd be a little more interesting if he were a wizard in a Second Salemer family.
This is true.
And I'm still just staring at this picture trying to find I'm just trying to look at what is going on with his leg. I'm now going to become slightly obsessed. No, I really like the comments mentioned about Chastity and Modesty. I think that is quite good. Considering how we know J.K. Rowling and her naming rarely is sort of insignificant, I think that is quite plausible that they are related, particularly Chastity and Modesty. But I think also relapsed fan, says, oh, it's a bit less obvious for Credence, but Chastity and Modesty, obviously, girls' names, is quite obvious, kind of woman playing the, you know, the female role, especially if, like, well, we're talking 1920s, but also you get the impression if they're harking back to Salem, we're talking, like, quite a bit, well, ago, not...
Yeah.
You know, more than 500 days ago, as we've established. So Credence, I think, for a guy, he's a guy and then, you know, the son of the family could potentially, if he is related to them, could potentially justify the name in that sense of it or being quite on the same lines, because you're not expecting the same chastity and modesty from men as they were from women.
Yeah.
And the 62442 on the passport is brilliant. So basically, relapsed fans should just come on this show and give all this information, because you guys are digging far deeper than we have. So well done. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you so much for your comment. It has given us a lot to think about, clearly.
Cool. So moving on to the next comment is from the head girl. The description of Queenie from Entertainment Weekly, they really are getting everyone's attention, Entertainment Weekly at the moment, reminds me so much of Suki from True Blood. A happy, outgoing, really lovely girl in a position that doesn't quite fulfil her potential because the rest of the world is a little too much for someone like her. Suki's telepathy feels much the same as Queenie's is described too. It's always on unless she does something to turn it off. I already loved Queenie, and Suki was one of my faves on True Blood, so I'm happy to hear some similarities between them, and I'll be interested to hear if any more emerge. I also found it interesting the way they were careful to point out that she doesn't use legilimency for dark purposes, because to me that sounds like, one, a cover-up for nefariousness in the past, maybe when she was a little girl and had less control of it, or perhaps foreshadowing that it's not used for dark purposes yet. We know that the second Fantastic Beasts movie deals with darker times, maybe Queenie gets darker with them.
No.
Okay, I'm suddenly just having like flash forwards to, oh my gosh, X3? What's the third? Last Stand. And the like Phoenix plot where like, oh, too much power for the girly, so girly has to die.
No.
Yeah, like, I hate that. I really hope that doesn't happen. I really
let like women be powerful without needing them to be saved by men.
I could see that happening though. Like, but just based on the fact that they're going out of their way to tell us that she doesn't use it for dark purposes, and that her and Tina are really close. So if they were at odds, there would be, like, some interesting tension there.
No!
But I don't know enough about her as a character yet to, like, obviously say.
No.
But I think it's an interesting possibility.
I have so many feelings right now. I think the reason they're emphasizing that she doesn't use it for dark purposes is because the only exposure we've had to it in the past as Harry Potter fans has been for dark purposes. And they want to show us that it doesn't have to be a dark thing. It doesn't have to be dark magic. And I want that so badly. I just want her to be a good person and for her and Tina to be the best of friends as sisters, because sisters don't always have to be against each other or fighting or I don't know.
It's all right. We'll get like together and we'll bake a cake made out of rainbows and smiles and we'll all just be happy.
Also, the always on thing is interesting because in Harry Potter, whenever we saw legitimacy, as well as it being used for dark purposes, it's the fact that if you're choosing to read someone's mind, that's you've got some agenda in that moment.
Yeah.
Where you're purposely trying to get a truth out of someone that they don't want to tell you right now. Which isn't necessarily inherently dark, but it's also a bit not nice. So the fact that she has it always on, she must struggle with that. And I like the comparison to Suki from True Blood. I hadn't thought of that one because I haven't watched True Blood in a long time. But yeah, I think that's a fun one. I was thinking, like I said before, X-Men. But I'm hoping it's more of the lighter side of that. I don't want her going dark.
I'm so sorry for interrupting both of you during that. I was just
Oh no, you're confident.
I was so upset.
Well, and actually, the more I think about it, the more I think it would be hard for somebody who can see people's, like, motivations and, like, who they genuinely are to get tempted by dark things. Because, I mean, the way that she reads people is that she kind of sees their emotions and, like, their...
Yeah.
I do
think so.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I do think there's going to be an element where she might get sidelined as a character, because if she can just hear everything all the time and work things out, she can potentially ruin quite a lot of the plot. There are scenes where, like, you sort of purposely get rid of Professor X in X-Men so that he's not, like, reading everyone's minds and solving the situation completely. So I think, yeah, I do think there is going to be a strong trio. With Tina, Newt, forgot the lead guy's name, and Jacob, potentially. And I think
Wizard.
Queenie will sort of pitch up every now and then in a fabulous coat and be cool.
Maybe I'm just kind of letting my imagination get carried away now. Maybe it's like somebody finds out that she can do this and tries to use her as a weapon, like, against her will.
Yes. She doesn't want to do it.
Yeah, but they're like, oh, we can use this. Let's capture you. And then they're like, no, we have to save Queenie. I'm getting really sidetracked.
I want that even less than just... they're going bad. I don't want any of the women to have to be, grabbed and rescued by Newt.
We have to go to the ministry.
Newt's like, I can't help her. I only know how to deal with Beast. I'm sorry. Tina's like, that's my sister. And then that's when, they have their troubles. And it's like a rom-com situation, but in a twisting world.
With cute little fuzzy animals popping up from time to time. That's probably why they didn't let us write the screenplay.
Yeah. We're all over the place with it. Oh, goodness.
Although, about Queenie that has sort of sprung to mind was, I really don't want her to be, like, the 20s version of a manic pixie dream girl. And hated the character Delphi in Cursed Child, which kind of is along those lines, of just, like, cool and alternative.
Is that what she's like in the play? I couldn't really get a read on that.
Yeah, she's got, like, a blue streak in her.
She's got, like, tattoos or something.
Yeah, and, like, she's just all cool and she looks like she goes to gigs.
Let me just say that I have tattoos and I've had all the colors in my hair and I love going
to
shows.
You go to gigs. So,
and I'm not cool at all.
You're a manic pixie dream girl.
No.
Have any of you guys seen We Will Rock You, the musical? Did that go to the States? Maybe not.
I don't
know.
Basically, like, the character Delphi, just for me, was like a character I've seen a million times on stage, particularly in that. But yeah, I would like Queenie, if she absolutely be a bit quirky and a little bit, like, all over the place and cool or whatever, but just I want it to feel original and not cliched, like, I'm ditzy, like Luna.
I keep picturing Daisy Buchanan.
Are you hating on Luna?
No, God, I'm not. What I'm saying is, like, people...
Okay. I was like, oh my gosh,
like,
Claire.
That kind of kooky character, but she's not, because she is beautifully written and very well acted. You can have those kind of characters, but if they're not written and performed well, they fall into that stereotype.
Oh, yes,
I think
absolutely.
Queenie has a
danger
of being that, from what I've seen so far, and also from seeing the actress talk. But I'm hoping.
Well,
yeah.
I think part of it, like, I trust J.K. Rowling to have a well-written female character because she doesn't, excuse the language, but she doesn't half-ass anything. She gives backstories to every character, no matter how minor they may seem. Case in point, Newt Scamander, who's getting his own film series, and he had just written a book in the original Harry Potter series. He was mentioned in passing at best, So I hope that, I mean, I love Alison Sudol, and what I've seen from Queenie so far, I think she's adorable, and she's got that 1920s vibe and voice and everything. I just hope, like you said, she's not a manic pixie dream girl and she's a fully fleshed out character and not just an idea or a cliche. So,
or Daisy Buchanan. That's she just reminds me of her. But that's probably because that's really the biggest frame of reference for like a young woman in the 1920s.
Yeah.
So.
But she wasn't a very nice character, so I don't want Queenie to be like her.
No. Daisy was the worst. I love The Great Gatsby, and I love that Carey Mulligan got to play Daisy, but Daisy was a horrible person.
Yeah. No, I don't want Queenie to be like that. I don't know what I said before.
Just shut up. Don't.
Just for the record. So on to the main discussion. We have just passed the 100 days mark until Fantastic Beasts is released in theaters. Woo. That was August 13th. That was the 100 days. So we thought that this would be a good time to recap sort of everything we know so far, everything that's happened, and then mention like maybe what we're still hoping for before the film comes out, things we're still curious about, and what we're most excited for. So to start, on September 12, 2013, Warner Brothers announced an expanded creative partnership with Joe in the form of a film series around the book Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. That was almost 3 years ago at this point. That's how long we've known that this was going to happen, which kind of seems crazy to me.
That was strange.
And then 5 days later, we found out that Fantastic Beasts had already been in the works for over a year and that Joe has, quote, full control of the screenwriting. So early on, they were doing their best to reassure us that it was all her.
It's going to be good. We swear.
October 1st, 2013 was when David Heyman was confirmed as producer. And then March 29th, 2014, we found out that the film series was, in fact, a trilogy.
For all those people trying to act like it's news 2 years later.
May 13th, the first Fantastic Beasts film got a release date of November 18th, 2016. July 3rd, we got confirmation that the Fantastic Beasts trilogy would film at Leavesden, where Potter was filmed. That's how you say that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
October 15th, David Yates was confirmed as director, which was cool because he did the last few Potter films. So continuity, yay! November 23rd, Joe finished the script for the first film. And then April 10th, 2015, Variety was the first to speculate that Eddie Redmayne would play Newt Scamander. June 1st was when that was actually confirmed. Hashtag wow. Confirmed.
Blimey, that's such a long gap between them announcing it. Because I remember thinking there were so many articles like, who's going to play Newt? And I was thinking, how did we write so many articles? I was like, it's because it was like a year and a half. Nearly 2 years. No wonder there were so many articles.
Did we, when did they announce Cursed Child? Like, not did we get Fantastic Beasts first?
Yeah, definitely. Because I remember vividly the day that Fantastic Beasts was announced, because I was working from home at the time. I remember being like, oh my gosh. It's actually starting again. Because I've been at Muggle nearly a year by that point. And I kind of joined. I was like, yeah, it's quiet. The news is dying down. It was literally like, I was on the news team. Nothing was really happening. And then they were like, boom, new trilogy.
Cursed Child was apparently not announced until December
2015. Oh, okay.
December? No, wow. That's all right. That's last December.
That was a quick Google search. I booked
my tickets last October.
Well, that probably was announced before that.
No, Claire just knew.
She was just ahead of things.
I got a feeling.
If I'd just known, I wouldn't have booked my tickets for selling February.
So, yes, June 1st, 2015, Eddie confirmed to be playing Newt. And then June 15th, Catherine Waterston was cast as Porpentina. And then from there, we just kind of had, like, rapid-fire casting announcements. So July 9th, Allison Sudol was cast as Queenie. July 10th, Jacob was cast in the form of Dan Fogler. July 16th, we got our first look at the set. And August 17th, about a month later, they started filming.
Wow. So here we are, a year later.
Yeah.
And it's all wrapped up and ready to go.
In November last year. Sorry, go ahead.
I said movie magic. It was stupid. Oh. Go on.
Seriously, though, just like interrupt me. I don't care.
No.
November 4th of last year, we got our first look at Eddie as Newt from Entertainment Weekly. And his coat.
Just had to throw it in there.
Oh. Which was... I was like, what is she spelling? Everybody was excited about it. December 10th, Warner Brothers released an official plot synopsis, so we kind of knew what the movie was vaguely going to be about.
Very vaguely at that point.
Yeah. December 15th, the first announcement trailer arrived.
Woo!
And then 5 days later, on December 20th, we released the first episode of Speak Beastie.
Oh,
oh my gosh. We had ourselves on the back there. Sorry, yeah. I'm just having a moment there. Wow. Yeah. What the hell?
Let's all take a moment.
Sorry, continue.
January 30th, an interview with Eddie came out, and he said that filming had already wrapped. So it was sometime before that that it wrapped.
They really jammed it out. They didn't spend that long on it at all.
No, no, from August to sometime in January.
And that involved them spending several weeks in Liverpool, too. There was, like, some moving around. April 10th, the teaser trailer dropped. April 26th, we learned that the Fantastic Beasts screenplay would be published in book form on November 19th, one day after the film comes out. June 28th, we got new writing from J.K. Rowling on Pottermore, including her piece about magic in North America and the option to be sorted into your Ilvermorny house. July 20th, there was a special test screening of Fantastic Beasts in Chicago. July 23rd, a new trailer dropped at San Diego Comic-Con.
Good trailer, good trailer.
Really good trailer.
Good stuff.
August 3rd, Warner Brothers confirmed the release date of the second Fantastic Beasts film to be November 16th, 2018.
Oh my god, there's going to be a sequel, guys. Oh my god.
A what?
No what?
So there's going to be two?
This is unprecedented.
Was it normal to have to wait 2 years in between Harry Potter films? Because I feel like 2 years seems like a long time, but
it was about probably isn't.
It was inconsistent, wasn't it? It was just kind of sporadic. It was one a year for a few years, and then there was a break, and then there was a few more. I think for something like this, for a trilogy, to have one every 2 years, it's kind of unusual. I mean, I think I'm trying to think of other trilogies, but you've got like The Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit was one off each year.
Well, Star Wars is doing one.
They released one every year.
2 years.
Yeah, Hunger Games one every year.
Well, I think actually between the first and the second film, there was a bigger gap. It was like a year and a half because the first one came out like earlier in the year, and then the second
one
came out
later. It was in March, I think.
Yeah. So maybe they'll churn out the next one, but then they're probably also just stretching it out.
Build anticipation.
Yeah, and maybe they're what they're doing. They're alternating with Star Wars, obviously. There's no way they're going to release the second Fantastic Beasts against Episode 8.
Can you just imagine what kind of year that would be? Oh,
good. Probably not for Warner Brothers. Disney would wipe the floor, but so good.
Yeah.
August 11th, tickets for the first film went on sale in the UK. Do you guys have your tickets yet?
Nah.
No, I don't.
That's why I never book cinema tickets this far in advance. Boy, is that although the Star People again does seem cool, but also I'm holding out for screenings because maybe they'll be nice.
You haven't planned when you're going to the movies in November yet?
So
that's silly.
I was going to go with my friend whose birthday's in November, and like we went to the Harry Potter movies together. Well, I think we went to one or two. But she's moving to Hong Kong because all my friends are moving to Asia at the moment. I now have three, soon to be four friends in Asia. Not cool. Very cool for them, but not cool. So I've lost my buddy. So
I'm sorry.
I'm sure I'll find other people. Maybe
I'll come to London and see it with you.
We'll all come.
London premiere party.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Sounds amazing.
We should have a little London team mug on our event. That would be good. Sophie, I'll be in touch.
Yeah, I'm in.
Can I just come over and pretend I'm in the London?
Yeah. Team? Basically anyone who is in London or in the UK is part of the London team.
Okay. Good. Apparently yesterday an international trailer was released.
Oh yeah. I have not watched that yet. I'm a horrible host.
London premiere is set for the 15th of November.
Oh, they've actually
and I couldn't find the New York date.
Better put that in my diary, you know, just in case.
Yeah.
Just want to
dear diary.
Wink, wink. Nudge, nudge to anyone who's listening. We love film premieres.
We sure do.
Also, a Lumos benefits screening in New York on November 12th with J.K. Rowling, Eddie Redmayne, and a bunch of cool people in the building.
Are either of you guys there?
Just Lizzie, I think, from Speak Beastie is going.
I think.
Yeah.
A couple of other people. I think
she lives closest to New York.
Mm-hmm.
New York's like 8 hours from me, I couldn't.
Super close.
New York is like, I don't even know how far because it's just that far away. It's like 20 states away. I don't know. Those aren't exact figures, obviously, but.
Exactly. That's how far New York is from Tennessee, if our listeners are wondering. 20 states.
Guys, Eddie Redmayne, J.K. Rowling, one room.
I know.
I didn't even know about it until it was already sold out. Yeah. And I was like, well.
They did turn out perfectly. It's pretty impressive.
Yes.
Yeah. And then, of course, the film release date is November 18th.
Woo!
That one is in my diary.
So. So then I just kind of summarized the basic points of what we know about, like, the plot and the characters. And
by
I'm
summarized,
probably,
you mean 2.5 pages?
You wouldn't believe how much I actually left out, though. Like, so, what we know so far about the film itself, except for some details that I left out.
I'm not sure you left any out.
The Megan's like, if you give a mouse a cookie, because she... If you give her main discussion, she takes it all the way. She's like, discuss everything.
I'm sorry.
Although we're deliberately going to stop her saying anything right now.
In the initial announcement from Warner Brothers and Joe, we are told that Fantastic Beasts is neither a sequel nor a prequel to the Harry Potter series, but an, quote, extension of the Wizarding World. So they've been doing this thing where they're like, it's not a sequel!
And it's not a prequel.
Yeah, even though, like, it sort of is. But that's none of my business.
It's not really a prequel to the Harry Potter story, so I guess it does make sense.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed her angry hashtags, so. It was worth it.
That's true. We also learned in the initial announcement that the story would center around Newt Scamander, whose narrative would start in New York 70 years before Harry's gets underway. So we learned all that, like, right off the bat. In New York at this time, Muggles are called Nomadges, and everyone hated that. And the Ministry of Magic is called...
Still do!
MacUSA.
Yeah.
Or MacUSA. Which stands for the Magical Congress of the United States of America. MacUSA is led by President Serafina Pickery in 1926, when we pick up the story. Newt Scamander, a magic zoologist, has immigrated to New York City by ship... from England with a briefcase full of fantastic beasts, sometime after being expelled from Hogwarts, but 1 year before the book Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them is published. He has collected these rare creatures from his travels around the globe, and he keeps them in his case, which is like Hermione's beaded bag in that it's much bigger on the inside. Upon arrival in New York, Newt discovers that the American wizarding community is fearfully hiding from the Nomadges, specifically a group of activists called the Second Salemers, who believe in reintroducing the ideals that led to the Salem witch trials back in the day. Back in the day being like 1690-something. And to skim over a whole bunch of details, the climate in North America between magic and non-magic people is a lot more strained than it is in Europe for a few reasons. The first one is Rappaport's Law, which J.K. Rowling talked about in her piece on Pottermore. And in the late 18th century, there was a huge catastrophe of some sort that breached the International Statute of Secrecy. And she goes into what that is, but it's like, you know, random and crazy. And as a result, the president of MACUSA at that time, who was named Rappaport, imposed a law that created total segregation of the magic and non-magic communities. And then the other reason is that they have these things called scourers. So during the Salem witch trials, the scourers were basically like the snatchers in Deathly Hallows. They would hunt down witches or wizards and exchange them for gold. MACUSA was created right after the Salem witch trials, and its first task was to try to put the scourers on trial. And as such, many of the scourers went into hiding for many years, and they passed on their dangerous beliefs to their children and their families, and thus were born the Second Salemers, and the mess that we're dealing with in 1926. Any thoughts, comments?
Your pronunciation of all those names was fantastic. Particularly Rappaport.
I have no idea if I did that correctly, but
it was very smooth. My physiologist as well.
It sounded good.
Yeah. Also, you know, right, you said at the top, like, we learned straight away that it was going to be in New York 70 years before. Again, like, we had a whole year of knowing that little tidbit, because there was, she tweeted the, not anagram, riddle. Was it riddle? Anagram?
Yeah, it was an anagram.
Joe tweeted the anagram, and people worked out from that. But then there was a whole, like, nearly a year based on the excellent timeline before we actually knew any more. So again, just a whole other year of just like debating and theorizing and casting and recasting news. It was a bit like, and it feels a bit like this at the moment, but it was a bit like the series being back out again. I know it's not Harry Potter and it's not new books, but that constant discussion and theorizing and debating and complaining,
taking that like one little tiny piece of info and just like beating it to death.
It's exciting.
Yeah. Also, I just want everyone to know that Ariel is correcting my spelling of things that I have already said.
It's not MACUSA.
It's
MACUSA.
MACUSA. I'm an American.
I'm doing it again. just gonna spell check you.
All right. You do that.
What?
This is great.
That was
guys.
My sad accent. I'm sorry. It was bad.
My friend Morgan, God bless her, she is horrible at accents. I don't know. She listens to the show sometimes, and if this makes it on, she's going to be like, hey, I got a shout out, but you insulted me. So, sorry.
Cheers, Morgan. I just kind of highlighted the three main sidekicks, and there's a lot of characters in this movie, and I figured we would not have time to talk about all of them, so no offense to all the other characters, you're all cool, but I'm only talking about three. besides Newt, I mean. So, during his adventures in New York, Newt meets up with our cast of characters. First is Porpentina Goldstein, aka Tina, Newt's romantic interest, and we know from canon that she later becomes his wife. She's very soulful and courageous. Tina and her sister lost their parents at a very young age, so they essentially raised each other and have formed a very close bond. Second is Queenie Goldstein, Tina's younger sister. She works a menial desk job at MACUSA and is a skilled legilimens, though, as we discussed on episode 18, not in the dark way that Voldemort was a legilimens. When we meet the Goldstein sisters, they're sharing an apartment in New York. And then, of course, Jacob Kowalski is a nomad who Newt befriends. He has just returned from World War I and is trying to rebuild his life and open a bakery, which is adorable.
This is so cute.
He finds himself in the midst of this magical situation, and he also sets off the action by opening Newt's case and accidentally letting the beasts escape. Dun, dun, dun.
So, hang on, that bit about him opening the case. So, I remember reading bits about that, but then also we've seen the trailer now. So we see him picking up the egg. So that's obviously where they meet. And then when does he open the case? When do we think that's going to happen? Do you think that's when, have we discussed this and I've forgotten? You've all gone quiet.
No, I don't think we have.
Do you think it's when, like, Newt invites him to climb into it?
I think it kind of looks...
Go, Soph.
What'd you say, Sophie?
Oh, I was just going to say, I don't know if this is what we're... Yeah, we were discussing this. Sorry, keep zoning out. But it kind of looks like he opens it up and he picks it up by mistake, doesn't he? And walks off with it, maybe. Like, opens it in his room. That's what I
I'm losing track with the trailers because there are just so many moments where Jacob is just picking stuff up and doing stuff with them that probably shouldn't be doing. I'm getting confused. I can't work out the chronology of it at all.
Maybe there's some sort of like accidental switch or something.
Yeah, that's what I remember us discussing that.
That's what I think. But maybe they're trying to confuse us.
Maybe he's
on
just
purpose.
Like, what's this? Okay.
Well, are we discussing how it happens or when it happens?
Both.
Oh, well, it was said before that he and Newt accidentally switch cases because in Jacob's case, he's trying to open up a bakery or of some sort. And so his is full of pastries, and naturally Newt's is full of beasts. So
these are cupcakes. That would be an unpleasant surprise.
Yeah, I think it may be, because in one of the trailers you see Jacob sitting down at a desk with somebody else, like maybe that's the person he's meeting with about opening up a bakery, and maybe that's when he opens it up, and maybe when the building is kind of blown apart, the guy who he was meeting is the one who... I don't know. Just a theory.
No, I like that. That's pretty good.
Could be.
That's how we started the whole pastries thing.
It's a better theory than my... What?
What were you saying? Sorry.
You're saying the guy that maybe at the beginning of the trailer that has the, like, it was dark or whatever he says. It might be like the bank manager or whatever that he has that chat with.
Oh, yeah. Maybe... the person he was meeting with. Because I can't remember. I'd have to go back and look. I don't know if we ever saw who he was meeting with exactly. I just remember him sitting in front of a desk with his suitcase.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right.
We've got two familiar names that have thus far been mentioned in trailers and screen caps, and that was Albus Dumbledore and Gellert Grindelwald. So we don't know how big of a part those two will play, if any, but we know that they're in the awareness of this community. And then hashtag confirmed beasts appearing that we know of so far. We've got a Niffler, a Bowtruckle, a Thunderbird, a Swooping Evil, a Demiguise, and an Occamy. I probably butchered those last two. But...
What? No, you good. I'm to say, and you did well.
Oh, thanks.
I'm excited for it to finally sort of pick up by, like, the general public. Because I think when you work for a fan site and you're, like, good friends or Harry Potter fans, people are generally quite aware. But I think the average filmgoer is completely oblivious to this movie coming out. And they don't know what it is. And to explain that or like exemplify that one, I was in the theatre cinema recently and the trailer started, Hedwig's theme kicks in, and me and my friend were like, yeah. And the people behind me were like, is that Harry Potter? I don't think it is Harry Potter. It doesn't look like Harry Potter. No, that's Eddie Redmayne. Eddie Redmayne's not Harry Potter. And they were going on and on through the whole trailer. So when the trailer ended, me and my friend turned around and were like, right. We're like, sorry to interrupt. But yeah, I'm just looking forward to that for other people to be slightly aware. It just feels like it just kind of has just... they're doing a lot of work for it. And so maybe people are, and I'm just missing that. But I think often it will take, like, it to happen. So, like, Cursed Child, yes, it sold out because all the Harry Potter fans went mental for it. But the second round of ticket sales that were recent, it was all the people that are going to make this movie the success they need it to be, because there are enough Harry Potter fans for it to do well, but for it to do like super well, which they probably want it to do, they need like the randoms, like my mum, who has seen two of the films but was really keen to go and see the play. I was like, you won't have a sodding clue what's going on. She was like, oh, everyone says it's very good. And so yeah, it's that kind of thing of they need to like drag that in. So I'm looking forward to that. I'm also just looking forward to having absolutely no like attachment. I think the whole general thing with Cursed Child is that it's like it's still the characters that we know and love, and whether they worked or not. Whereas this, like, we don't know these characters. We have absolutely no affinity with them. Yeah. We don't have any backstory. We've got no expectations. Like, I'm hoping they'll be good actors, and that I will enjoy them. But I can't see myself being let down by this movie. It might be like, that's a disappointment, but it hasn't destroyed my childhood. but I don't think it will. I think it's going to be a solid movie. Whether it's an amazing movie, we'll wait to see. But I'm just looking forward to just enjoying it, I think.
I agree with that.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to just getting to know like the new characters. Like when we were talking about Queenie earlier, we don't really know about her. It'll be good to learn more about them, and also the whole 1920s thing. I'm really looking forward to seeing that.
Yeah.
Cool.
You know, I love Alison Sudol, and I think what we've seen of Queenie so far, she's adorable, but I don't want to jump to any conclusions about any characters other than Credence, so...
I like that you covered your butt there.
I know what I say when I say it. I'm just genuinely excited for this series. It's not anything that I thought I would have wanted. Gosh, I don't know, ever? But that's not me trying to be mean. It's just, you know, when the Harry Potter series was happening, when the books were coming out and the movies were still coming out, I was kind of in this bubble. I was young still, and I was kind of in this bubble where I thought, this is going to last forever. And even, you know, when it does end, I'll still revisit it. But it's just, it's you do revisit it, but it's kind of not the same. Like, it's nostalgic. It's not anything new. So for something new to come out that has been written by Joe, that has the same, or some of the same people working on the films as were working on the Harry Potter series, it, you know, the trailer starts and you get those feelings again, like, oh my gosh, I never thought I'd feel this way again. Like, it's love. It's like, oh, Harry was my first love, and now he broke up with me, and I'm having to move on. And
I never thought I'd find love again.
Exactly. Here comes Newt, and I'm getting these feelings, and it's okay. I can accept it. I can move on, and it's just a good, happy feeling, and I always will want to go back to the Wizarding World, and I'm just pleased. So very pleased. That's all I have to say.
I'm looking forward to having some really good meat to discuss on these podcasts. It's not like, oh, I think there's a...
Instead of like, maybe Queenie will be abducted by aliens and then everyone will have
to... Yeah, we can actually break it down scene by scene.
Yeah. Oh, that's going to be awesome.
Nice.
All right. Well, I'm sorry I just talked for like a half an hour, but that, I think, is it for the main discussion.
Yay.
Shut up.
Wow. This week's time turner is a random one, and it was thrown out by Shannon, who couldn't make it this week. And I was looking at it, I was like, I think I'm going to change this. And then I looked up this woman, and I was like, nah, people need to know about her. She's got absolutely nothing to do with the Wizarding World. But... she sounds great, and we need to tell stories like this. So the person that we're looking at this week for the Time Turner is Gertrude. Also, first of all, fantastic name. It's the name of one of my parents' dogs. And I can't...
That is amazing.
Yeah, I thought we were going to get rid of the dog, and so I was like, we're going to call her Gertrude. And then we kept her, so she's still there. And then Gertrude Dull. I think that might be how you pronounce it, who was the first woman to swim the English Channel on August 6, 1926. So, you know, of the time. Unlikely to feature in Fantastic Beasts, but hey, the Olympics happened recently and that was great. So let's just talk about cool sports people. So prior to swimming the Channel, she started swimming at 9 and then became like a formidable amateur swimmer by 15, which is pretty impressive. So she was setting world records, and in the 1924 Summer Olympics, she won 2 bronze medals and a gold in the 4x10 meter freestyle relay. She sounded incredibly focused. She was a bit grumpy about she was a bit disappointed, I should say, about her 2 third place finishes. So sort of setting some high standards for herself. And after swimming from Battery Park at the tip of Manhattan to Sandy Hook in New Jersey, a distance of 22 miles, she decided she was going to swim the English Channel. And first of all, I recommend everyone goes to Mashable.com because there are some excellent 1920s photos of her where she is wearing a t-shirt that looks like it's got a snitch on the front. Like, I was looking at this being like, that's weird. But then, like, my favourite one is she's in, like, proper 1920s, like, jumper gym outfit with, like, 2 weights on her shoulder just casually doing a squat. And she just looks so serious. It's just really, they're really funny. And there's one proving she can touch her toes. Anyway, beside the point.
Do you know how wide the channel is? Does it say?
It is 20... Oh, I always forget this one. It's... Oh, I'm going to double check. The English Channel. You think I should know. I've gone over it in a boat.
I mean, I feel like I don't know how wide bodies of water are here, so I don't know why you would know how wide the English Channel is. But...
It's quite a famous... Okay, so its shortest distance is 21 miles. Yeah, so that's what, it was a little bit less than a marathon.
Okay.
So she'd already done 22 miles, but the English Channel is... It's not really about a distance. It's very choppy. I mean, now it's really dangerous because of all the ships, but I think also pretty much the same then, and it's pretty filthy as well. She was only 20 years old when she did this, and before that 5 men had done it, but she was the first woman, and she was nicknamed the Queen of the Waves. She tried it the first time but got pulled out of the water by her trainer, who she then promptly fired because she was outraged that he would do that. She sounds great.
How dare you? Yeah.
And then her second attempt, and there is an excellent quote in which they say that she greased herself with petroleum jelly and lard to protect herself against cold water and jellyfish. And then donned her modified motorcycle goggles, which are amazing. You also need to take a picture of that. And struck out for the English coast. So she swam from France to England. And she swam it in a record time. So not only was she the first woman, she also smashed the male record by more than 2 hours. She swam it in 14 hours and 45 minutes. She did it in 19, not 20. Oh, excuse me, guys. She did it at 19 years old. And there are some amazing stories about how when she was arriving at the coast, people could see her coming and they started lighting bonfires along the coast. There's like quite a tradition of sort of beacons around the UK, especially on the coast. And people were lighting these bonfires so that she could see it. And then by the time that she actually got to the shore, she would be able to have thousands of people there waiting and cheering her. And then when she went back to New York, she had a ticker tape parade, and more than 2 million people arrived in the streets to cheer for her. And again, if you look at the pictures, it's slightly ridiculous. The New York streets are just absolutely rammed with these cabs trying to get down, and a lot of hats. 1920s, everyone was wearing hats. But like we said, nothing to do with Fantastic Beasts apart from similar time. But what a fantastic woman! And you should definitely go and check out some pictures of her because they are cracking. And I'm hoping we see some similarly excellent outfits from our Fantastic Beasts movie stars. Yeah, that is Gertrude Erdl.
Cool. Shall I go on to the newt case?
Yes.
This week's newt case, we're looking at the Ashwinder, which in the Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them book, it gets a Ministry of Magic classification of XXX, which means a competent wizard to cope. And the description is, the Ashwinder is created when a magical fire is allowed to burn unchecked for far too long. A thin, pale grey serpent with glowing red eyes, it will rise from the embers of an unsupervised fire and slither away into the shadows of the dwelling in which it finds itself, leaving only an ashy trail behind it. The Ashwinder lives for only an hour, and during that time seeks a dark and secluded spot in which to lay its eggs, after which it will collapse into dust. Ashwinder eggs are brilliant red and give off intense heat. They will ignite the dwelling within minutes if not found, and frozen with a suitable charm. Any wizard realizing that wild boar Ashwinders are loose in the house must trace them immediately and locate the nest of eggs. Once frozen, these eggs are of great value for use in love potions and may be eaten whole as a cure for ague. Ashwinders are found worldwide.
Do you think that's what was in like the Room of Requirement whenever there was fiend fire and they kept saying there were snakes in the fire? Do you think, I mean, maybe that was just part of the curse, but that's what I thought of when you said
there
are snakes that come out of fire.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of that.
I thought how the fire in the films kind of manifested into each of the animals from each of the Hogwarts houses. Mm. I kind of assumed that's what it meant. Like, it took the form of a snake, not so much there were physically snakes.
Makes sense.
Because it was cast by a Slytherin, so I thought, oh, well, sure, yeah, it'll do that. I don't know. I guess I didn't think too much of it, but that would be interesting. Because it does say, you know, an unsupervised fire that goes on for too long and then they're only alive for an hour, which is so cool and interesting. And they leave behind these eggs that will then produce more fire. So it's I don't know, like what a strange creature. I'm not scared of this one at all. Even though it's snakes and fire, like, why shouldn't I be afraid? But no, it's just weird.
When I first reread Fantastic Beasts after they announced it, admittedly, this is probably the first, if not one of the first in the book, but I do remember reading this, being like, this could definitely work really well on screen, even if it's just like a little comical scene of one's let go and they've got to go run around and find it. I just like, it's relatively simple because you can just like hint at it and only have to show it once or twice. So cheap, CGI wise. But yeah, so I hope it does feature, and apparently it will. So that'll be good.
Yeah, well, I found something that said it will, but I haven't seen anything else about it. So I don't know if it's actually in there or if that was just speculation. I don't know. Mm-hmm. It would look really cool on screen.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Oh, and there was one more little thing if we're ready to move on. There was one more little thing I found when I looked it up. It came up on the Harry Potter wiki that there was a reference in Tales of Beedle the Bard in one of the introductions that Dumbledore wrote, where he says that this is from the Harry Potter wiki, so this is sort of a summary of what was written. He says, "While Armando Dippet was headmaster of Hogwarts and Ashwinder was used to represent the bloated and blind worm that appeared in the retelling of the Fountain of Fair Fortune during a Christmas pantomime, unfortunately the creature was enlarged using an engorgement charm, causing it to explode in a shower of hot sparks and dust." And this... Ooh. Yeah, doesn't sound good.
No.
that was the end of Hogwarts pantomimes, so that was quite a fun little reference to it.
Goodness.
I love that story. It makes me think of so many Andram productions, which is great.
Yeah.
Please include that tidbit you have in parentheses.
But the last bit.
Yes.
Okay, so when I googled it, the very first search result that comes up, apart from all the fan art, is that it's the name of a popular Snape and Hermione fan fiction. That was a bit confusing. I didn't read it.
That is a weird ship. No offense to anybody else who likes it, but that's a weird ship.
It's a weird ship and a weird name for a story.
Yeah.
So
I don't like to ship shame, but
that's a whole category though. There are people who genuinely like, there's a lot of Snape Hermione shippers.
Yeah, this was on a whole dedicated website for it.
Wow.
I'm like, why do they keep pairing Hermione with men who treat her horribly?
Yeah.
Like, not even you know, Ron levels of ignorant and say, you know, oh, you're a girl. I'm talking Malfoy and Snape, who were so mean to her. She punched Malfoy because he was so mean to her. It's not, I know they want the whole, like, good girl, bad boy dynamic, but come on. No. Those never work out. Let's not, I'm sorry. That's not what we're here to talk about. I just had feelings for a second.
So that's that.
Good stuff. I like that one.
Yes, that was very good beast.
Thanks.
Good on you, Sophie.
Woo.
So, for this week's podcast question, we want to know what you guys are excited about for this film. Just let us know via Twitter, email, owl, post, whatever. Send us in your fantastic theories, comments, questions, Spotify playlists.
Oh, yeah, that'd be nice.
Yeah. Book recommendations, anything you want. Just a quick reminder that most of the Speak Beastie team will be at New York Comic Con, where we're hoping to have some sort of meetup planned. So stay tuned for more details about that coming in the very near future. And also buy t-shirts if you want. Thank you, Claire and Sophie, for joining us from over yonder. Sorry we made you stay up late.
It's been great. Yay. So, if you want to get... Shall I move on? Yeah.
You're good.
Sorry. If you want to get in touch with us, you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at SpeakBeastie, Facebook at facebook.com/SpeakBeastie, Tumblr at SpeakBeastiePodcast.tumblr.com. And don't forget that Speak Beastie is on Patreon. So if you want to hear hilarious bloopers and extended conversations, be sure to check out patreon.com/speakbeastie to find out how you can get in on that awesomeness.
I'm Megan.
I'm Ariel.
I'm Claire.
And I'm Sophie. Case closed.
Megan.
I'm Ariel.
I'm Claire. Sorry, guys. I was reading the top of the dock and then I was like, I got lost. Sorry.
I think you should just leave it like that. I'm Claire. I'm Ron Burgundy.
That's what I was going to cover next. That was perfect.